Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC. Hope you had a good weekend. I'm Sebastian Salazar. Going to be joined in just a little bit by Frank LaBeouf and Stevie Nicol. We'll look ahead to the FA Cup semifinals now that the last four is set in England. But we start with the huge transfer news across Europe. Juventus and Barcelona confirming the swap deal is done. Miralem Pjanic heading to Barcelona. Arthur heading to Turin. 72 million euros plus 10 million. Apparently what Barcelona will get, all that includes Pjanic being valuated at 60 million euros. We welcome in Sid Lowe, Julian Laurent for more. Sid, what do we make of this move? 82 million euros for a guy that Barcelona seems not to need. Sounds like pretty good business.
On the face of it, it sounds like good business, but it's not really. What this is about basically about fixing up a financial problem that Barcelona have, and a financial problem that they have right now. They needed to raise around about 67 million euros before the end of the financial year, which of course is on June the 30th. That is why this deal has happened, because actually the amount of money changing hands is not very much, but you can put all of the earnings that you get, or the supposed earnings that you get from selling Arta into the budget now. The amount that it costs you to get Pjanic, you can then spread over the next 4 years. In other words, you can post a big profit, and you can do it by the end of the month. And what that enables Barcelona to do is to protect its directors from the personal liability for not meeting their budgetary targets for this year. This is a deal, make no mistake about it, that's being driven by that, by the finances, not by the football.
Jules, you can understand why Barcelona fans would be upset then. Decisions made over money and not football. Will Pjanic's arrival soften that blow at all, do you think?
I can completely understand why they would be upset. And when you lose a 24-year-old who looked very promising when he arrived first, and you swap him with a 30-year-old who clearly looks more towards the end of his career than to the beginning, you're right to be upset. You get Pjanic, who is a good football player and has a lot of experience, has won many trophies, but who plays in exact same position as Sergio Busquets, for example. And you could even argue that the young best position is always almost in this sort of similar, again, profile and similar position on the pitch even. So why getting Pjanic? It doesn't make any sense football-wise, like Sid has very well explained just now. It just makes sense for them in terms of numbers.
All right, let's turn our attention to the La Liga title race, which has been turned on its head really in the last week. Real Madrid now 2 points clear of Barcelona with 6 matches to go after Madrid won on the weekend. Barcelona dropping points. Sid, I'll start with you. Luis Suarez with the comments about Quique Setién, an ESPN report now saying that Setién and his relationship with the players is strained. And then the video that we saw from the game over the weekend, Messi effectively ignoring Setién and his number two. That's a lot of smoke if there isn't fire.
It is a lot of smoke, and actually it has been partly confirmed by Setién today in his press conference. Now, obviously, he doesn't go so far as to say, yes, there's a problem in the dressing room, which, of course, no manager would ever say. But he does admit in his press conference today that this is a dressing room that is different to anything that he's been used to in the past. He says, these are different challenges, and I'm learning. In other words, I've not had to deal with players of this magnitude before, of this personality before. He also said, and I think this is a very telling remark, that for the sake of all of us, we have to learn to come together. This has to be a team. And of course, you only say that when there is a sense that it's not at the moment.
Jules, specifically the comments from Luis Suarez, I wonder what you make of them. He really specifically points out the manager. Is it a fair criticism?
Yes, and he's not the first one. We remember Messi back in March, I think it was, when he said, if we keep playing like this, we're not going to go anywhere. And now Suarez saying there's a problem. Well, ask the manager. He's the one who should sort the problems out, especially away from home. I mean, Setién, the problems were there before Setién arrived. You know, Setién has arrived as he quite maybe naively said, this is all new to him. And when he was appointed, one of the question marks that we all had was, how will he deal with his dressing room? Because he's never known anything like this. At Betis, they were completely different players than the one he has now. Now we are superstars and you've got Messi and Piqué and Suarez who pretty much run the club anyway. So, and Busquets. So it was always going to be a hard task, I think, for him and for Edu Sarabia, his assistant, as we saw that quite humiliating video, really, and the way Messi completely ignores Sarabia in that cooling breaks at the weekend. So it's just not looking well. And on top of that, when you see how not well they've been playing and when Messi is not at his best, how much they're struggling and conceding goals. And again, against Celta Vigo, they could easily have lost that game. And now They've got Atletico coming next, and this is a hell of a game when pretty much in the next four or five days they could lose it all in La Liga.
Sid, any chance they could sack at the end? Champions League still out there?
Well, on the face of it, I would have said no. I would have said there's no point in doing that. But you're right, the Champions League being out there, I suppose, poses a question about whether there's something to be done in the short term. And look, we've seen, I mean, we partly see this with the Arta and the Pjanic deal, that from this board of directors, you cannot rule anything out, particularly if they believe that it's something that provides them with the opportunity to survive. And so if they were put in a position where they thought they had to, for their own sake, as much as for the team's sake, then it could happen. But I must say right now, I think Setien sees the season out, and I think doesn't start the new one.
Jules, I don't remember anybody being louder about getting Ernesto Valverde out of town when that occurred than you on this very show. You have any regrets now? They were first in the league then. They are not anymore.
No at all. And we've seen at times some improvement under Setien as well. It's just think, It's hard when you've got the injuries that is hard, for example, of the players missing, that is hard, even if Suarez came back from his injury, and it's part of this end of the season when it shouldn't have been really, if the pandemic hadn't happened. But I think it would have been hard for anyone. I just think Valverde had lost too much credit towards the players, with the fans as well, with the media too. I think it was the right call to sack him. Bringing Setien, I don't think was the first choice. As we all know, Xavi was the first one. They even went all the way to Qatar to try to convince him to come at the turn of the year. That didn't happen. So then Setien was maybe not even the second choice, because Ronald Koeman probably was the second choice. So, you know, it was not really the guy they wanted in the first place to replace Valverde. But listen, there's 6 games to go. There's the Champions League. It's still not completely over. But certainly they will have to play far much better and be far more united than we've seen in the last 2 games.
Sid, if Barcelona had a bad weekend, Antoine Griezmann had a worse weekend. He's getting criticized for ducking out of the free kick. That's the eventual equalizer against Celta Vigo. What's been the reaction in the Catalan press?
Yeah, the reaction has been critical, but I think in terms of focusing it purely on what he did in the free kick, I think is incredibly harsh. He jumps and he turns his body. That is true. It's also true he does that having had the instruction from the players, right, no one moves. No one gets out of the way here. We stand firm and we stand tall and we stand straight. But that's a really minor part of Antoine Griezmann's responsibilities at Barcelona. I think there are far, far bigger questions at play than whether or not he slightly turned his body during that free kick. He shouldn't have done. No, that's true. But it's not the end for him. I think that the situation for him is much more serious than that, in truth. It's about whether there's a place in the team, about whether you can construct a team in which he works. And of course, he will be thinking that he hopes there's a very significant change in the summer, and that whoever comes in as manager is a manager who's absolutely committed to getting the best out of him. Because of course, in the right structure, we know that he's a very good footballer indeed.
Jules, things going from bad to worse. You think this was the straw that broke the camel's back for Griezmann at Barcelona?
I don't know. I feel for him, as I've said many times on the show, and I'm keen to defend him, because one, he's played out of position, and if you play Griezmann wide, you can't expect him to have the same performances that he had at Atletico with France, where he played as a second striker, for example. That's the first point. The second point is, okay, on the wall, should have done better or not turn his back. But then let's not forget that when Nolito has that huge miss at the end, the one who's been running all the way from the opposition box to actually sort of disturb Nolito in a way, I guess, is Griezmann, who is in his own 6-yard box when Nolito hit the ball at Ter Stegen. So, yeah, of course, he could have always done more. He could do better. But again, I think there's a lot of circumstances that make you understand a bit more why things haven't really worked out for him so far. And yeah, we can all say that it was the wrong move for him and the wrong move for Barcelona, but it's a bit too late now to say that. I think they should all find a way of making it work for him, for the team, for the fans, for the club, also for someone like Messi and Suarez, who don't seem that keen on playing with him, but who surely knows that if Griezmann performs well, it's in the benefit of everybody at the club.
Right then, guys. Other side of the title race, Real Madrid. Incredible backheel assist from Karim Benzema. Sid, we've talked about Messi dependencia. We've heard Ronaldo dependency. Does Madrid have a Benzema dependency now?
Well, they do, in the sense that this is a player that doesn't get rotated. He starts every game while the rest of the forward line gets shifted almost every match. Brilliant this season. He started to perform, I think, importantly in the really big matches as well, which perhaps was one of the criticism that could have been levelled at him before. He's taken responsibility on. He's a wonderful footballer. He brings others into play. He's been really, really important. I guess we don't yet know whether they have Benzema dependency, because we haven't seen them without him, and we haven't seen how they would struggle without him performing. Because actually, unlike with Messi, when he hasn't been at his best this year, other players have sometimes stepped up. So we've seen good performances, for example, from Vinicius. We've had moments from Rodrigo. We've had good performances from the midfielders. I think if you had to choose a best player in the Real Madrid team this year, you'd have a choice between maybe Casemiro, maybe Cruz, maybe Benzema, maybe Ramos. And so there's four players there. If you had a choice in the Barcelona team, apart from the goalkeeper, and of course the goalkeeper is always, if you like, a different case, it is Messi and nobody else. So in that sense, the dependency on Messi, I think, is still greater than the dependence that Real Madrid have on Karim Benzema.
Jules, he's so good right now, inarguably one of the best players in the world, yet it seems so unlikely that he'll ever play again for the French national team. Does that frustrate you?
Yeah, I find it frustrating. I understand why Didier Deschamps has made that call, and we all know the off-the-field issues that Karim had with Mathieu Valbuena in the last 4 years. Could Deschamps move on, and bring him back? Maybe, but this is a team that won the World Cup without Karim Benzema, and if you bring Benzema in, you need to change a lot of things that has been working so well for them. So it's a tricky one. I get that. I just think it's crazy, really crazy, to prevent yourself from having such a talent in your team, whatever team you're managing. And I think Deschamps must sometimes think, God, he still would be good to have him in our squad, which I think is true. I mean, this season, I think he's incredible. He will be 33 in December. And for me, he's had the assist of the season, as we saw this weekend, and the goal of the season, as we saw against Valencia as well. And for someone like him, I think he's just wonderful.
Back to Real Madrid real quick, Sid. Eden Hazard, I mean, this is a player we were told was in amazing shape. He was going to make the difference over this stretch run. It doesn't seem to be the case. How do you explain it?
No, it doesn't seem to be the case. I suppose I explain it partly by thinking that maybe that some of what we were told about the shape he was in and the excitement was wishful thinking. Partly maybe he was performing well in training but hasn't been able to apply that in games. I feel a little bit like this season is a write-off, and maybe the question is how he can come back in the summer, whether he can be fully fit for his second season and a season where he's fully fit all the way through. Because of course he's had injuries and those haven't been his fault, and there's been a couple of times when it's looked like he was going to play really well and it just kind of hasn't quite happened. So I don't think it's time to give up on his Real Madrid career, but maybe this season. Although that said, you know, we're still talking about six games left in La Liga and basically the key games in the Champions League still to be played. Imagine he has just two great games in Champions League, say a quarter final and a semi-final, or a semi-final and a final, and I think we'll look back on this season and say, yeah, that was worth it.
That's the thing, Jules. It really would only take something special in that Champions League that everybody's going to be watching, and we'll forget the struggles of Eden Hazard, won't we?
Yes, you're right, and I think he's got that in him. We saw against Valencia already, a lot of brilliance for him in that game. Him and Benzema, the way they're linking up, they get on very well off the pitch as well. They're very good friends, and you could feel it's not that far, but maybe the lack of fitness that he didn't have earlier in the season is sort of catching up a bit, or he's a bit struggling because of that. But you could tell it's not far, and you're right. In the Champions League against Man City, for example, in that second leg, whenever that happened, whatever that happened, he could have that moment of brilliance that qualifies his team. Same in the remaining six games of La Liga as well. He could have a decisive action, movement, goal, assist at some point that will tip the La Liga towards Real Madrid and win it for them. So I still think that Zidane believes a lot in him, and I think everybody still should, because he was very unlucky with injuries, very unlucky in a way with the pandemic arriving, although that enabled him to still be playing now, otherwise he would have missed the end of the season. So I still think we could expect and probably will see more good moments from Eden Hazard between now and the end of the season.
Sid, one more bit of transfer news involving Real Madrid. Achraf Hakimi reportedly going to be sold to Inter Milan. This is one of the best young right backs in the world. He's 21 years old. Why wouldn't Real Madrid hold on to this player?
Yeah, I think it is difficult to find an answer to that. I guess the answer resides in the fact that Dani Carvajal is still young enough and consistent enough to know that he's going to be first choice. And then, of course, you have to look at it, I think, through the perspective of the player himself. And Achraf has probably looked at that and thought, I'm not going to be guaranteed minutes. I'm not going to be guaranteed to be a starter. And that right now is what I want. And so when you reach that position, and of course, Real Madrid yeah, they can force him to stay, but there's really not a lot of sense in doing so. And I guess you reach the point where you decide, okay, the best thing to do is to get a good deal for him now, to get the money and to part on good terms. And who knows, maybe he comes back one day. But as we understand it, there's unlikely to be a buyback option. So this is the end. And I must confess, I think seen from Spain at least, it's a real pity.
All right, thanks, Sid. Thanks, Jules, as well. If you want more from Jules, make sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, available online. FA Cup semifinals are set. Manchester United will face Chelsea. Arsenal will face Manchester City. So we could have a Manchester derby, a London derby, depending on who gets through to the final. For more, we welcome in Frank LaBeouf, Stevie Nichols. Stevie, I'll start with you. I don't know if it's the timing on the schedule, the big six matchups, but it seems like the FA Cup is getting a little bit more shine right now. You agree?
Listen, I think because of the pandemic and everything else, you've kind of probably forgotten that this is what happens most years. You know, we talk about what teams are going to be playing. Is it going to be the first team? Is it going to be a mix? And then when we get to the quarterfinal stages, then everybody wants to win the FA Cup. And that's where we are. You know, we saw some decent games in the quarterfinals. Now we've got, historically, four teams with huge histories. And so it looks all rosy. And indeed, it will be great. I'm certainly looking forward to both games. I think because of what's going on, you've forgotten about what happens in the past. And as I said, what's happening today is what's happened previously. The big boys, when it comes to the end, get there.
Frank, I know you love the FA Cup. It seems like it's getting a little bit more attention this year, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely, Sebi, because of the names that you have in the semi-final. I mean, you said it. We have two big games with maybe a derby in a final. I mean, I had the chance to win the FA Cup twice, and it's absolutely a fantastic trophy to get, and the most followed in the world as a cup. So domestic cup. So everybody has an eye on it, and it's so nice for the clubs to win it, and especially I think for Manchester United, for Arsenal, or for Chelsea, it would be a fantastic plus and something special for them. For Manchester City, I think it's different, where it's kind of they have to win it, like that they can get a domestic trophy before hoping for Champions League trophy. But they have to win it because they couldn't win the Premier League. For the others, it's more than a plus because I think they don't have the teams to fight for the first place in the Premier League. So it can be a fantastic ending for those three.
Stevie, let's put Manchester City, Pep Guardiola aside for just a second. The other three managers, Lampard, Solskjaer, Arteta, who of those three do you think needs the validation more that this trophy would bring?
Ooh. I think the one that would be the happiest of all would be Arteta. I mean, the truth is, before the pandemic and after the pandemic, in my opinion, in the Premier League, Arsenal are the weakest, no question. And as good as Arteta seems to be at making decisions and as a coach and as a manager, he's got a poor side. So, listen, I think of those three managers, the happiest of all would be Arteta, because that would take some pressure off him. I think the other two, no question, are ensconced in their jobs. And so Arteta, for me, would be, no question, would have the biggest smile on his face, certainly bigger than either of the other two, if they did indeed win the FA Cup, which I don't think they will, unfortunately.
Frank, real quick on Chelsea. They're in the top four fight as well. Any chance, I know it's just two games, that this could distract from that chase?
I don't think so. I think Lampard and these guys want to get something, and they want to go to Champions League for next season. So they're going to fight until the end, and they're going to be able to play also the FA Cup. I mean, Chelsea is a big club. The players who play for that club know that they have to fight for different projects and goals. So they're going to go for it. They're going to give their best. It's not going to be easy to play at all, against Manchester United. They know that, but they're going to go for it, and without losing in mind that they have to keep on winning in the Premier League to allow them to go to the Champions League next season.
I know we're focused on looking ahead to the semifinals, but we have to look back at one moment from the quarterfinals: Manchester City, Newcastle. Dwight Gayle with has to be described as just a point blank miss. Stevie, when you see that as a former pro footballer, do you sympathize or do you have a chuckle?
At the time, no, I don't chuckle at the time. No, you do sympathise, and then you have a chuckle in that order. And it's really the finish of somebody whose basics aren't right. You know, when you have a ball coming across the penalty box, 6 yards out, with so much pace on it, you shouldn't be swinging at it. You know, you should be getting yourself in a position where you can use the pace of the ball just to redirect it into the back of the net. And I'm sure Gayle, on many occasions after trainings, has had somebody firing balls across, and he would do that. But you know what? When you step on the field, things change. And when you get the opportunity and you don't remember all those times that you've spent training and finishing, then you see what happens. And that's unfortunately what's wrong with Gayle. At times he can be great, and at times he could do what you saw and balloon a ball over the crossbar from, 6 yards?
Frank, I wonder what goes through your mind when you see a miss like that.
Well, I sympathize because we saw many fantastic players doing it, and he's not the only one, and I'm sure in the near future we're going to see that again. I mean, I'm sure during the training session he could have tried that 10 times and put the ball in the net nine times. So you want to sympathize because it's more reflex when you see his upper body leaning.
He better have done it 10. 9 out of 10, you should get 10 out of 10 for there.
No. I think it's about reflex. Again, his upper body leans towards the sky where you have to go towards the floor to make sure that the ball stays down. But if you do that in training session, of course your body is going to go there and then the ball never go above the crossbar. So I really think it's a misluck for Gayle. And it's an important misluck, but it's a misluck because I'm pretty sure that he's good enough to put that in the net. 9 out of 10, Mr. Steve Nicholls.
I think you've been very nice to Gayle. Come on, that is bread and butter. He should not. If he takes 10 out of 10 in practice, he should be scoring 10. I failed to mention actually the biggest mistake he made is he swung at it. And when you have to swing at something, that means your timing and everything else has to be spot on. And that's why I said, you just use the pace of the ball, you get your body in a good spot, and you redirect it.
Well, we promise no near misses on tomorrow's show. Dan is back for a huge day in both Italy and Spain. The boys will recap all the action. Here's what the Premier League table looks like. You can see 3 through 6 separated by just 6 points. Manchester United in there. At 6, they'll face Brighton on Tuesday. Stevie and Frank still with us. Stevie, it looks like the duo up top, Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford, has been the go-to pairing for Manchester United in league play. Why do you think it's working so well?
Well, I think it's working so well because you've got two players that have great ability and two players that have missed a lot of this season, certainly before the pandemic, but are now back, particularly Rashford. So you've got two hungry young men with ability, and they're getting after it. And they've also got a player in Fernandes behind them who can supply them with ammunition. Now, as great as these two can be as a pair, I still have question marks over certainly Martial and that pairing. Yes, he scored a hat-trick recently, but again, almost every time you think this is it, this guy's going to produce, every single time he steps on the field, he lets you down. And I still have that feeling that he may let you down. So as great as they potentially can be, yes, they're good, but they should be better consistently.
Frank, like Stevie says, when it comes to Martial, it's always about consistency. Do you think at this point in his career he's going to find it?
Hopefully, yes. I mean, I think he became more mature, but that we don't know if The consistency is going to be a real tool for him. It has to be because, I mean, it's how you judge a player and a striker, especially when he keep on scoring and scoring. What it can go also for Rashford, where I don't think he was more consistent than Martial, but the pair works very well right now. I think they're both very confident. They look of each other very much. They make some good runs, you know, without the ball, who freed the other one. So it's very interesting what they do together, but it's true individually. I think they have both to work very much in their consistency and score more goals and appear more as leaders and make sure that the future of Manchester United will depend on the success, and the success means many, many goals.
Stevie, as we mentioned, Manchester United in six, trying to get into that top four. If they are going to make the top four, who do you think drops out?
Right now, I would probably have to see if either Chelsea or Leicester drop out. It's got to be Leicester. They haven't started particularly well after the long layoff. The squad, I don't think, is as big as Chelsea's, or as good as Chelsea's. And it's probably not as big or as strong as United. So I think Leicester have to start picking up wins, not just points. I thought if they consistently picked up points, then that would be enough for them to stay in the top four. But United are looking as though they can go and win games. So I think if any of the two, I'm going to have to go with Leicester.
Frank, are Leicester vulnerable?
Yes, they are. I think Stevie said everything. They didn't start well after the pandemic. They don't seem to react. We saw quite good first half against Chelsea because Chelsea didn't have the A team, let's say. But when Lampard made some changes for the second half, we saw a different game. And it seemed that Leicester is not as good as he's been like before March, and it's going to be a big problem for them to keep that third place and even the fourth one. So yeah, they might slip out of the Champions League spot. Yeah,
you know, one thing I'd like to mention as well, I think the biggest difference between certainly Chelsea and Leicester and probably Manchester United right now is that Leicester still are playing some good football, getting up towards the final third. But in the final third, they don't look capable. Vardy doesn't look capable. Barnes coming from that wide area that he did, certainly before the pandemic, was dangerous. So they just don't look as though they've got the goals in them to stay in the top four. That I think, is the biggest difference for me between certainly Leicester and Chelsea.
All right, thanks then to Stevie. Thanks as well to Frank. Stevie is back for today's edition of Extra Time, where we're joined by the one and only Julian Laurent, taking your questions. All right, that's all the time we've got for this edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to everyone who joined us, Julie Foudy, Sid Lowe, Frank LaBeouf, and as we just mentioned, it's now time for Extra Time with Stevie and Jules. Hey there, folks. Welcome into this edition of Extra Time. We got Julian Laurent. We got Stevie Nicol. I'm Sebastian Salazar, and we have your questions fresh off of Twitter. We'll start with this one. Where does Karim Benzema rank among the best strikers right now? Jules, we talked about this in the show. What do you think?
Oh, for me, he's right up there with Lewandowski. Two different style of striker, of course. I don't think Lewandowski could have come up with that genius backhead of an assist on Sunday night, for example, but there are the times where Lewandowski scored goals that Benzema could not score. But I think he's right up there in terms of pure number nine as one of the two best right now in the world. And thinking that he will be 33 in December, and that he's still getting better and better and better, I think he deserves so much credit, not just for the assist against Espanyol, but I think for everything that he's done since he arrived at Real Madrid, the way he helped the team and Cristiano as well, and the way he then became so important for them when Cristiano left, I think he deserves so much credit.
Stevie, which of the three noticeable changes, five subs, spare balls around the pitch, or water breaks, do you think could become permanent?
If you're lucky, the balls, because you You're going to stop for a water break in December? I don't think so. And you can't have five subs. I mean, this really does absolutely give the bigger clubs a huge, huge advantage. So, if anything, it'll be the balls.
Jules, the one you have to worry about is the water break, so they're definitely going to try and keep that. I'm thinking just for commercial purposes alone.
Why commercial? We don't have any commercial in Europe.
I'm telling you, right? It's going to stick around. You think that's going to go away when all this is over? They've just built a chance to make millions of dollars in a commercial space in football they've never had before. No chance that's going away.
But Stevie is right. In December,
no
when it's snowing.
Holy smoke.
In Stoke, where you have a tea break, so they can warm up a bit and have a cup of tea or a cup of coffee, so they're not too cold, and they go like, because the cooling drink breaks only works when it's really hot, right? So in the UK, for example, it's, most of the season that's not the case.
We'll brand it a hydration break, and they'll figure out a way to get it in. All right, no doubt that Atalanta can win a game at the Champions League tournament.
Hold on a minute. Yeah. No. That was a quick collapse. You went from telling Jules this is going to happen.
You guys can
completely collapse.
Okay, I've made my point. We'll see. The future will tell us.
Shit.
You think the business that runs football is going to turn away money?
Leave it.
That's fine.
Move on. Leave it.
All right. Team parlay picks about Atalanta. Can they compete with the big boys like City, Bayern, Barcelona? If they do, get to the semifinals. Jules, what do you think? Atalanta, can they make a deep run in this one-off tournament?
I think the big luck that they had is that those quarterfinals and semifinals would be over one game. If it'd been home and away, I think they might have struggled a bit more. But over one leg, it's just leveled the playing field so much that anything is possible with them. They're such a fantastic team going forward. They can and will score against pretty much anyone. And I think that they could have easily two fantastic performances, let's say in the quarterfinal and semifinal, and then qualify for the final. Over the three games, it's still a hard task for a team like them with the lack of experience that both Gasperini and the players have to maybe go all the way, seeing that the team that's still left in the competition. But they certainly have a bigger chance now to go really far in the Champions League compared to the chance that they had before when it was the normal format, if you want, with home and away and that kind of stuff. So they have to believe. I mean, they've got nothing to lose anyway. It's already a miracle that they went that far because they were almost out after four games in the group stages, seeing they had 1 point. For them to be in the quarterfinals is fantastic, and I think they would have nothing to lose, and I just would not fancy playing them at all.
All right, speaking of miracles, Stevie, now that Sheffield United are on a poor run of form and will most likely not qualify for Champions League, isn't it a certainty that Jurgen Klopp will win manager of the season over Wilder?
I think you probably just answered your own question. Yeah. Yeah. And he should. Listen, as great as Sheffield United have done, it's extraordinary. But what Liverpool have done is even more extraordinary. I mean, you talk about absolutely tearing apart every single team in the Premier League, mental points, breaking all kinds of records. I mean, you can't not give it to Jurgen Klopp. Please make an argument for anybody else.
I'm not good at making arguments in this space, so I won't. Last question. All-time favorite movies
yeah, we
for Stevie, Sebi, and Jules. Jules, you first.
What was the question?
I was thinking on Jurgen Klopp and Chris Wilder and stuff like that. What was the question?
All-time favorite
movie. By the way,
why
didn't you ask
Stevie,
me my
Sebi,
opinion?
And Jules, you get the
first
crack at
it. Why didn't you ask me my opinion about best manager of the season? Why didn't you ask me? Why isn't it just Stevie?
Do you want to? Yeah, sure. Okay. You think Chris Wilder will win it even if they don't make Champions League?
So as you're asking, and it's very kind of you of asking me as well as Stevie, Sebi, I was going to say that actually before the Premier League resumed, I said on the show, I think I was with Danny Hingenbottom, that I would give it to Chris Wilder. And now I would like to review my judgment, please, and give it to Jurgen Klopp, actually. Not just because Sheffield United have so falling away a little bit since the restart, but because I really believe that Liverpool as well will keep on winning and will beat the records of number of points. They will have three wins in the last three home games in the league, which we mean they would be 19 out of 19 at home in a season, which is simply incredible. And I think after all of that, he will really, really deserve even more than now. So I've just changed my mind. I just wanted to tell the whole world.
Stevie, I didn't ask you about Atalanta. Were you hurt about that?
Distraught. I nearly left.
Can we get to this last
Jules
question?
Is right.
All-time favorite movies for Stevie, Sebi, and Jules. Stevie, what's your all-time favorite movie?
That's tough. I mean, there's a host. I mean, things like Braveheart are obviously very Scottish. Another favourite of mine is an old, it's based in the 70s. Rita Sue and Bob 2, it's called. It's a classic. But I guess probably the film I've watched more than any, particularly recently, is Law Abiding Citizen with Gerard Butler. It's fantastic. You can't, every time you watch it, it's great.
Jules,
would you say what on Rita Sue and Bob 2?
Yeah, it's only because I never heard of it, that's all. What's the story?
It's set in Yorkshire, and it's about a couple of girls that babysit, and the whole family. It's just set in the 70s. On a council
estate. Yeah, you're
really
selling it. That's great.
You're really selling it. I mean, I'll go and check it out.
I'll tell you what. Hold on. Here, I've got one for you, Julian, and you must get this. You will love it. It's called Bostock's Cup. Bostock's Cup. It's a classic about 70s football in England. You will absolutely, honestly, you'll adore it. Bostock's Cup.
I'll check it out.
Stevie, why is it that Jules would adore it, but I wouldn't?
Well, because it's about football and you don't know anything about football.
All right.
Sebi, you were looking for that one. You were looking for the answer.
Oh, what? Hey, if you don't want the answer, don't ask the question.
All right, let's put a bow on that edition of Extra Time. We are back tomorrow. Plenty more.
What about my movie? Hey, what about my movie?
I'm sure.
What about
my
movie?
Send your questions to the hashtag FC Extra Time. That's it. Jules, you want more questions?
You didn't ask for my movie.
Oh, okay.
We only asked for the Scottish collection of 70s movies.
I asked you three times and you wanted to talk about Sheffield United and Atalanta and everybody else.
I've never seen so much disrespect to anybody in this show, Julian, than he's given you today.
See, Stevie, this is a shambles. This is a shambles.
Talk about it.
Custard pie. Complete custard pie.
So my movie has to be Gladiator. I'm sorry, it's not very original, but are you not entertained?
No.
All right.
That's it.
Too long.
All right, that's it for Extra
Time.
You can watch all your movies ahead of tomorrow's show. We'll be back. Plenty to discuss. Don't miss it.